How do the Texans look right now?
Like the worst franchise in football. The worst. Number one worst in football. You understand they've so alienated Deshaun Watson, who is the leader you want.
Deshaun Watson is indeed the quarterback the Houston Texans want. They signed him to one of the biggest ever NFL contracts just a few months ago. But what could have been this love story is suddenly a soap opera. Today, the story of what went so wrong in Houston and what it'll take to patch things up. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, January 21st. This is ESPN Daily. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Sarah Barshop has covered the Houston Texans for ESPN since 2016. If you were to just sum up what is happening right now between Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans at this very moment, how would you begin to summarize that? Maybe like in a sentence.
What is happening?
Apparently, Sarah, there was like a protest on Deshaun Watson's behalf that was being planned. Explain to me what just happened there.
On Saturday night, I saw that on Twitter. I saw people saying, I'm going to drive down from Austin. I'm going to come from here. I'm going to come from here because I want to protest what the Texans are doing to Deshaun Watson.
What were the fans of Deshaun Watson who were protesting here looking to change? What were they protesting exactly?
They were protesting the fact that this organization has somehow made their franchise quarterback so unhappy that there are reports that he wants to leave and maybe not play another snap for this team.
More reports now are surfacing nationally that Watson is not happy with the direction Texans ownership and Texans leaders have taken of late and wants to be traded despite the fact he's under contract. A small group of fans today stepped out to support their quarterback.
No one really thought about what day Monday was or the fact that we are in a coronavirus pandemic. And apparently there were hundreds of people, that's what I saw on Twitter, hundreds of people who said they were going to come and they were going to walk from Deshaun's restaurant called Lefty's. It's a cheesesteak franchise. The fans were going to walk from Lefty's to the stadium and they were going to go stand in front of the bull statue and protest. And then, of course, on Monday, we see Deshaun Watson tweet, "Hey guys, I really appreciate your support, but it's probably not the best idea with coronavirus going around. Please be safe and don't protest."
And the source of all that unhappiness, Sarah, from Deshaun and then from the fans who are unhappy because he's unhappy, it all goes back to January 6th. That's the date when the Texans announced their new hire for general manager. And I want to talk with you first about the finalists for that job who were identified by this fancy search firm, Korn Ferry, but who the Texans did not hire.
One of their candidates, and who Adam Schefter reported was the firm's pick for the job, was Omar Khan, who's the Steelers' VP of Football and Business Administration, and someone who is very highly respected in an organization who has obviously had a lot of success on the personnel side. They also talked to Louis Riddick, ESPN's Monday Night Football analyst, someone who's received several GM interviews in recent years, and then Matt Bazergin, who is the Texans' director of player personnel. He's been here since May 2018, and he helped run the team this season after the Texans fired Bill O'Brien.
It feels important to note, Sarah, that the Texans paid a lot of money to that search firm that recommended they hire one of those three guys. But that Cal McNair, who is the CEO, who is the owner, he seemed to ignore all of that, at least from the outside. And he hired this guy named Nick Caserio. And Nick Caserio didn't just get hired. He got a six-year deal with $30 million in base salary, which is one of the biggest deals for a GM anywhere in the league. And he comes to the Texans from the New England Patriots. So how did Caserio get this job?
From what I've been told, the Texans were scared that another team were going to hire Caserio and they were going to do it fast. The search firm had already talked about Caserio in 2019, so Cal kind of knew their thoughts on him. This goes back to November when Cal McNair and Deshaun Watson sat down and had dinner. And Cal McNair said that he and Deshaun talked about the future of the franchise. Texans had already fired Bill O'Brien, so they knew they were going to hire a head coach and GM back in November. So the two of them had dinner and they talked about possible candidates. They talked about kind of the direction that Deshaun Watson wanted to see this franchise go in. Later in the season, he had another Zoom call with Cal McNair. And they talked again, maybe more specifics than that first dinner. Then Deshaun Watson's on vacation in January, and he sees on the news, oh, sources say that the Texans are hiring Nick Caserio as their general manager.
The Texans have hired a GM, Nick Caserio, and Deshaun Watson took to Twitter on Tuesday night, writing, quote, some things never change. Now, we don't know for sure.
The frustration was that he didn't find out from the team. And we know how this works. We know that it's not always possible. A lot of stuff does break on social media, but he was very frustrated that he was not as included in the process as he says that Cal McNair told him at that dinner and on that Zoom call that he would be.
So who else inside the building of the Houston Texans was pushing for Caserio above and beyond those candidates that the search firm had identified?
One person that has been in the news a lot is Jack Easterby. Jack Easterby was named the executive vice president of football operations by Cal McNair in January 2020. He was with the Patriots for six seasons. Easterby spent a lot of time in New England with Bill Belichick and was very well respected by him.
You know, Jack was here for 6 years. You know, he was really good for our football team, for the organization. And he had a good interaction, relationship with everybody in our building.
And he had a very strong relationship with Nick Caserio. In fact, Caserio was asked several questions about Easterby during his introductory press conference. And he said,
my relationship with Jack is a special relationship, and we've known each other a long time, and I have a lot of faith and trust and confidence in him, and, you know, I'm excited to work with him.
And Cal McNair even admitted, he said, I did ask Jack Easterby about his opinion on Caserio because I know their history. And so there's been a lot of involvement from Easterby because of what McNair has asked him to do, and I don't know how involved he was in the process with the search firm, but he certainly was when Cal McNair asked him about Nick Caserio.
Yeah, this is a particularly unique dynamic, it seems, Sarah, because Jack Easterby's title officially is Executive Vice President of Football Operations, but he also came up through the NFL in a different way, right?
Yeah, he was a team chaplain a decade ago when everything happened with Aaron Hernandez in New England. The Patriots hired him, and he slowly worked his way up. He was very involved with the players there, and he was the character coach, was what his title was. And then in 2019, he decided he wanted to go somewhere else. And I was told that he had a lot of offers, and he ultimately chose the Texans because of his relationship with the McNair family. And he just felt like that was the best place that lined up with his views and his faith. Bill O'Brien had talked about how he worked very closely with Jack Easterby. He helped with contracts and basically whatever Bill O'Brien asked him to do. He was involved in a lot of different areas of the Texans organization. And then after Bill O'Brien was fired in October, Cal McNair gave Easterby the title of interim general manager. And he basically said, you're in charge of personnel right now until we hire a new GM.
And just to be clear for those who are not as familiar with the inner workings of NFL organizations, that seems pretty rare, doesn't it? The idea that this guy would go from a pastor, a chaplain, all the way to this high rung on an org chart.
Absolutely. And in fact, when I asked Bill Belichick before they played the Patriots, the Texans played the Patriots this year, I asked him about Easterby and if he thought that he would ever end up in this position. And he said, Jack's not a personnel person, no.
Easterby is not this figure, Sarah, that is recognizable to fans. How does the building or those who are associated with the Texans, how do they feel about him? Are they complaining about Easterby's influence?
No one has really spoken out about Easterby except for one person, and that's Andre Johnson.
Andre Johnson, who's one of the great players in Texans history, tweeted, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic.
Johnson is a former star receiver for the Texans who leads the franchise in just about every receiving category there is. Now, one thing to know about Andre Johnson, and I think this is why this comment stood out so much to people in Houston, is that he doesn't speak out a lot. But he is very well respected in this organization. In fact, he was part of the committee that Cal McNair talked to before starting this general manager process. He is the only Texans player in the Texans Ring of Honor. So he is very well respected in this organization, and he does not tweet things like this. In fact, one thing I saw pointed out that I very much enjoyed was that this was his first tweet that was not a promoted tweet since April of 2019.
So how does Deshaun feel about that tweet? Do we know his thoughts on it?
Well, he didn't publicly respond, but later that night, he and Andre Johnson went to a Rockets game together. Andre Johnson posted a picture on Instagram of the two standing together.
And I'm looking at the photo right now, Sarah, on Andre's account. It's not just a picture. It says, stand your ground, !! space at Deshaun Watson. And coming up, Sarah, I want to ask you to dive deeper into the mindset of Deshaun Watson and what happens next.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Sarah, one person we are not seeing Deshaun Watson pose with on Instagram so far is Texans CEO Cal McNair, who inherited the team in November of 2018. That was just over 2 years ago now, but Cal was super involved in the team's business for many years before that, including in 2017. When the Texans took Deshaun in the NFL draft, what's Cal McNair's relationship been like with Watson before all of this fallout?
I think the relationship has been a complicated one because it's hard to talk about this without talking about Cal's father, Bob McNair. During Watson's rookie season was when the ESPN The Magazine story came out with Bob McNair's quote about inmates running the prison.
Lots of tension at Texans camp on Friday. It stemmed from comments from the team's owner, Bob McNair, at NFL meetings last week. ESPN The Magazine reported that during a discussion about player protests against police brutality and other injustices, McNair said, this is a quote, "We can't have the inmates running the prison."
At that time, when that news came out, it came out on a Friday, and several players, including DeAndre Hopkins, left practice. And they almost didn't play. I mean, Hopkins has even said in interviews since then, I mean, they really thought about not playing in Seattle. And that was very challenging for a lot of players on this team to deal with, especially Deshaun Watson as a rookie. He said in recent years that he wished he had handled that differently, maybe spoken out a little more, but he understands that he's a rookie. And so when you come to the NFL and that's kind of your first real experience with management and the team owner, I think the trust level weakens a little bit.
What was Bob McNair's response when all of these players on his own team felt very clearly uncomfortable and wronged by that?
So he first immediately said, "I regret that I used that expression. I wasn't trying to offend anyone." And he said, "I wasn't referring to our players." But then later, a couple months later, actually, after this had not died down, but it certainly wasn't the topic of conversation as much as it was in October, he did an interview where he said, "I regret that I apologize for that because I really didn't have anything to apologize for."
So that is Bob McNair, the late father of Cal McNair, who is the man who had been trying to sort of wine and dine Deshaun Watson after Bill O'Brien got fired, Sarah. What did Deshaun want? What was his preferred strategy when it came to hiring a GM, hiring a coach? What was his goal as this player who is finding his voice and trying to exert leverage kind of for the first time in his career?
One thing that really stood out to me is that his end of season press conference, Deshaun Watson was asked a question about what he looks for in a head coach.
We just need a whole culture shift. We just need new energy. We need discipline. We need structure. And we all got to be on the same page. There's too many different minds and too many different ideas and too many people thinking that they have this power, and it's not like that.
The day before, he had said, "We don't really have a foundation here." And so what that tells me is he had seen how having the same person be the head coach and general manager had worked out, how there was not a lot of stability in this organization, and he wanted something different. He wanted a whole new culture shift.
Sarah, it feels worth noting that if Deshaun Watson specifically wanted a culture change, then Nick Caserio at GM was definitely not a choice in that direction, because he comes from the same Patriots background as the guy they just fired in Bill O'Brien. But also, this hire came after another big decision that Cal McNair had made in March, and that was without Watson's input as well, when he traded away DeAndre Hopkins, his star wide receiver. So how did that one decision compound with this other big decision?
Adam Schefter reported earlier this month that when Deshaun Watson found out about DeAndre Hopkins being traded, again, not from the team, that he was a 2 on the level of 1 to 10 and being mad.
I was told that if his anger level was a quote-unquote 2 last year after they traded DeAndre Hopkins away, his anger level now is at a 10.
So basically, Sarah, they messed up 2 times in Watson's eyes. DeAndre Hopkins and now Nick Caserio. But there is this other large decision that is looming about who they're going to hire as the head coach, with Bill O'Brien, the former head coach plus GM, now fired. And Cal McNair has again said that he wants Deshaun Watson's input. So what do we know about who the team's considering? What does Deshaun want at this point in a head coach?
In that same end of season press conference, it was actually Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs offensive coordinator, that Deshaun was asked about when he talked about how he wanted a leader.
Like I said, I haven't met. I probably met him, I think, through passing Eric. I think after a couple games we played the Chiefs, haven't really sat down or been around him too much, but I heard nothing but great things about him.
And so it was, of course, very interesting when the Texans were the one team with an opening who didn't request Eric Bieniemy for an interview right away. But the important thing to note is that that happened before the Texans had hired Nick Caserio. And Cal McNair had said this whole time that he was going to lean on whoever he hired for general manager to help with that head coach decision. The Texans did ultimately request Bieniemy for an interview, but we'll never know if it was because of the pressure from Deshaun Watson or because he truly was on Caserio's list of candidates, and that's why the timing worked out the way it did.
And we should also be noting here, Sarah, that Bieniemy is a Black coach at a time when there is more scrutiny and attention being paid to diversity in coaching. And after the Texans interviewed minority candidates, as you said, for the GM job that Caserio ultimately got, that seems a significant detail. And it all sort of leads into this question of the power that Deshaun Watson, this Black quarterback, superstar quarterback, has within the organization. How reasonable is it for Deshaun to expect that he would have more sway in these things? How do things usually go when it comes to the demands a player might have within an NFL team?
I think in general, we haven't really seen an example of a quarterback or really any player saying, I want to have a heavy input in this process. I want to talk to the finalists, and especially for a general manager job. I think head coach is a little bit different. But I think it goes back to the fact, if Cal McNair told him, hey, we want you to be involved, and then he was not involved, I think therein lies the problem. And that's why Deshaun Watson is upset right now.
I can't stop thinking about, Sarah, that bit of footage that Showtime got on Inside the NFL of J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson walking off the field together after that final game of the regular season. And J.J. Watt says, I'm sorry we wasted a year of your life.
I'm sorry. We wasted one of your years. I'm sorry.
So what is Deshaun's current commitment to the Texans contract-wise?
Deshaun Watson is under contract through 2025 because he signed that 4-year, $156 million contract extension in September, which made him the second highest paid player in the NFL behind his friend Patrick Mahomes.
So hold on, because it's January right now, September, October, November, December. Less than 5 months ago, this deal happened. They put a ring on it. They found their franchise cornerstone. What did that signify at the time? Why did they do that?
The Texans knew they had to and wanted to build around Deshaun Watson. I mean, I think that's part of the reason they traded DeAndre Hopkins, is because they knew they had so much talent on this team and some big contracts, and that if they wanted to pay Deshaun Watson what they felt he was worth, they had to get that money from somewhere.
So now this bizarro version of like NFL Bachelor is happening, even if the Texans would like it to very much not happen, because all these fans, Sarah, are speculating about which team could get Deshaun Watson in a trade. If this were to all start to happen, Sarah, what does it take? What's the first step in terms of this thing becoming a reality?
Deshaun Watson would have to formally request the trade, which is something he hasn't done yet. And then because he has that no trade clause, he would have to be involved at least a little bit in the discussions about where they could send him. I've heard teams thrown out from the Jets to the 49ers to, of course, the Dolphins. I did think it was very interesting in my internet sleuthing that he liked a photo on Instagram talking about a trade to the Jets. That's really the only indication we've seen from him. He is right now in New York. So that's another piece to that puzzle. But I think if it gets to this point in the process, he'll, of course, have to sit down with Casario and Kyle McNair, and they'll have to talk about some destinations. But I will say, I've never seen so many jerseys photoshopped onto a player's body as quickly as I did with Deshaun Watson when this all came out.
But it's important to note, too, the Texans don't actually have to do anything, right? I mean, they could decline to trade him. They could sort of deal with whatever would result from that.
Right. I mean, he has 5 years left on his contract. The other side of that is that he could decide to sit out, and they could fine him, and he could decide to continue to sit out until it reached a point where they decide, well, we don't want to trade you, but if it's that, or we're not going to get anything in return for you, I guess maybe we should trade you. This could get very ugly before it gets any better. Even if it doesn't end up with a trade, I think we could be looking at some dark days ahead for this Texans franchise.
So now, Sarah, we have this franchise where the owner is paying, I guess, lip service to including his star quarterback in major team decisions, finally. And this is, quite notably, the organization where the last owner, his father, specifically and offensively worried about players having too much power in the first place. So what does it say about Deshaun here that he's been so outspoken about what he wants?
I think really it speaks to the leader Deshaun Watson has become. And whether or not he is involved in this process, whether or not it is just lip service, as you said, I think that it shows the power we're going to see from players. All over the NFL, I've seen people applaud Deshaun Watson for the stance he's taking. And I think this could be a huge turning point in kind of the landscape of how much power players do have in these sorts of decisions.
So just your gut check sense, Sarah, right now, do you think you'll be covering Deshaun Watson next year?
I do. I think this franchise has seen how hard it is to get that franchise quarterback. They finally have him. I just don't believe that you can let a player like that go. But we saw them trade away Jadeveon Clowney. They didn't re-sign Tyrann Mathieu. They traded away DeAndre Hopkins. But ultimately, he is your quarterback. He played so well last year. If there's any way that this organization can fix this, they've got to do it. Maybe that's hiring a head coach that he wants. Maybe it's just giving him more input into the head coaching process. But you need to find out where he stands, what he's unhappy about, and try and fix that if you want this relationship to be repaired.
Sarah Barshop, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you. I know you'll look forward to seeing my Twitter likes in the next couple of days, but it was great to kind of untangle this web of this whole story with you today.
Up next, what we've lost now that Philip Rivers has stepped away from the game.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. Philip Rivers announced that he's leaving Office yesterday at age 39, after spending 16 seasons with the Chargers and this last one with the Colts. No, Rivers never did make a Super Bowl. But the quarterback was such a colorful character for so long that our own Mina Kimes painted a half dozen portraits of the guy in watercolor, just for fun. So I called Mina up to discuss her football muse. Mina, what was your reaction when you heard that Philip Rivers was retiring?
Dadgummit. I don't know if I deliver that the way Philip would.
Dadgummit!
That was like a 2 on the Philip Rivers impression scale, I think.
I know. But okay, so I'll say this. I was not surprised. You know, been hearing for a while this would be Philip's last season, 1-year deal with Indianapolis. But part of me sad because, Pablo, he's been one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch play ever since he came into the NFL. Not just because of his talent and sort of the emotion and character he brings to the field.
Can't play with 12, Greg! Hey, Greg, you can only play with 11, Greg!
But I just like watching him throw the ball. You know, he's got such a unique throwing style and...
I mean, unique is a very gentle euphemism, Mina.
And he did it to the end. He's just the same quarterback he's always been. I will miss watching that. I will miss that moment when whatever team he's on, you know, mostly San Diego for most of his career, was down 1 score with 2 minutes left on the clock. And you just, you know, a little tingle went down your spine because you knew Philip Rivers was driving.
Number 17, Philip Rivers, out of the shotgun. He's backing up. He's being rushed. And he launches. Looking end zone. Has a man. It is caught! Vincent Jackson reels it in. Incredible. 29 seconds to go.
So much tingling over the last 17 years of Philip Rivers. And now we're at this place, Mina, where there is a real debate that's already started about whether he should be in the Hall of Fame. So what do you think about that? And how close a call is that debate, do you think?
I think he should, but I understand why it's a close call. I mean, the problem with Hall of Fame debates is there's no really objective guideline for what it is. You can look at career production counting stats, and by that metric, he undeniably belongs because he ranks 5th in most passing categories. The fact that he had such longevity and durability, and we're talking about a guy who had 240 straight starts, that seems to matter. One thing that I always look at and that matters a lot to me is dominance. When I'm asking if a player belongs, I ask, okay, were they ever one of or the best player at their position? Philip Rivers from about 2008, the next 5 years, consistently ranked in the top 2 to 3 quarterbacks in football. So I think he was dominant. Now, the area where he's lacking, obviously, is postseason success. 5-7 record, never appeared in the Super Bowl. But I think if you put Eli Manning, who often gets roped into this conversation, in the Hall of Fame based on his Super Bowl success, you have to put in Philip Rivers for the other reasons, because he was the better quarterback than Manning throughout the course of their careers.
So when you think of Philip Rivers, your muse, Mina, many years from now, what's the image that is going to be in your brain? What are you going to remember? What does that look like?
It's hard to choose just one face because, you know, Rivers, that was one of the gifts he gave to us, was the reactions. I mean, the man was a meme before memes existed. But I think there's one from a couple of years ago, not that long ago, where he's smiling and then whispers, "Let's go."
That, you know, that one. Yeah, that'll always be in my head. And I like that one because, you know, he looks so happy. So I'd say that, yeah.
It looks like he's whispering a little secret to us.
Like, let's go. Yeah, that and the bolo ties.
Ooh, the bolo ties are great. Mina Kimes, thank you for bringing your unique voice to ESPN Daily.
Glad to be back.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.